Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Can you imagine what it would be like to self-publish your own book? It could be scary. Tell me, can you imagine what it would be like to write historical fiction? Have you ever wondered why you should think about self-publishing? Well, you should think about it, because guess who did it? Mark Twain did it many, many years ago. Now, would you like to learn what happens when you adore doing research? Well, I know what happens because I'm addicted to research. Tell me, have you ever heard of a book called Red Line Farm, a novel of the Underground Railroad? Now, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for today? Now, are you ready to learn how to be successful and how to jumpstart your life after 70? If you can answer yes, just like me, or maybe, to any of these questions, then you are in the right place. And I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today I'll be introducing you to my guest. This is her first time on the show. She is an amazing writer, and she will provide us with wonderful information, lots and lots of inspiration, and some really, really great advice. I'm pleased to announce that this show is now live on Talk for Media and syndicated on iHeartRadio Talk with over 55 million subscribers. We are archived 24/7 for your listening pleasure. Our show has now had over 4 million listeners to date. So now it's time for you to sit back and relax as you enter the no wine zone. Pour yourself a glass of wine, then get some cheese and crackers and enjoy our show. Now let me tell you a little bit about our guest today. Our guest was born the youngest of 8 children in Altoona, Pennsylvania, a gritty railroad town at the base of the Allegheny Mountains. She grew up there and in nearby Williamsburg, Pennsylvania, earned her bachelor's degree from Penn State and became a teacher. But deep in her heart was always the desire to write. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show today Judith Coopley. Hi, Judith. How are you doing?
I'm just fine, January. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you here. Earlier, before we went on the air, you mentioned that you were from Mesa, Arizona, but you're back in Pennsylvania. I suppose you're back visiting all the grandkids?
No, actually, the grandkids live in Mesa where I do. I'm back promoting my latest book.
Oh, you're on a book tour. How exciting for you. How many books have you written?
I have written 5. Novels, historical novels about Pennsylvania and, set in Pennsylvania.
Okay. We're going to talk about the how one goes about writing a historical novel. But first, let's talk about your history. Let's talk about where your success story began. Where were you born? Who were your early mentors? Tell us a little bit about you.
Okay, I was the youngest of 8 children in a working-class family in Altoona, which Altoona, if you've ever heard of it at all, probably you've heard of it as a railroad town. And I grew up there and in a nearby smaller town called Williamsburg. And, I just a normal, ordinary kid. And I got lucky when I was in high school. I won a scholarship to Penn State. I became a teacher. Although always in the background, writing was there. I started writing probably at about the age of 11 or 12. I can remember my teacher asked me in sixth grade, she asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I said, well, I wanted to be a lady that writes books. And so that, I think, was the beginning. And I wrote a lot during my youth. And I was kind of recognized by my teachers and other people as being a pretty good writer. And I believed it. And so I just kept on writing. And I was, I'm one of these people who is linear. That is, when I'm doing one thing, I'm doing it. Don't ask me to multitask. I'm just not there.
Okay.
as a mother, I was a mother. As a teacher, I was a teacher. But writing was always there on the back burner. I always wanted to. I wished I could. I wasn't sure I would ever be successful at it. And so, it was always just in the background. And when I retired from teaching, I decided, okay, it's time to do it or not do it. Put up or shut up. And so I took it very seriously. I said, okay, this is my time. This is my chance, and I have to make the most of it.
Well, it's so amazing that you had this passion just kind of bubbling around within you. Did you have any particular people who were mentors who really knew you were going to be a great writer?
No, but I had a father who was a writer.
Oh.
Now, he was. This is a wonderful story. My father was in World War One, and sometime in the 1930s or 1940s, I don't know for sure when, because all I know is this was done before I was aware. He wrote a book about his experiences in World War One.
Wow!
And that was in his cupboard. He kept it put away. I never read it when I was growing up. I just kind of knew it was there, and. Both my parents were readers. They read all the time, and that was just something that was done in our house. We all read all the time. And so I think when you're a reader, I think maybe many readers aspire to be writers. You just think maybe you could do it.
Yeah. I think it goes with the territory. I know when we were traveling in Germany a few years ago, we went into this monastery, and they took us into where the monks would do their research and writing. I walked into that library, and I looked at my husband, and I said, this is heaven. We have just arrived in heaven. And I think when you have that love of reading, the part where you can translate it into writing a book is just one of the most amazing things that can ever happen to anyone. When did you write your first book?
Actually, that's a little bit hard to think about. I did some nonfiction. I lived in Wisconsin for a while, and I wrote, co-authored actually, a book about a Wisconsin wildlife artist. And that was published way back in about 1983, and that was a fine experience, but it wasn't the kind of writing I wanted to do. And then I thought I wanted to write YA, young adult novels, and so I did some, because I was a teacher of young adults, and I thought I knew them pretty well. So I did. I had a couple books that I worked on off and on. You know, like I say, I was really a teacher, and that's what I concentrated on, so I didn't devote myself entirely to writing. The first book that I did as a serious writer of historical fiction, I wrote after I retired from teaching, and that was in 2004. And then I tried to go the regular, normal route. I had an agent, and I, was waiting for the agent to find somebody that was interested in it and so forth.
Yeah.
And I waited, and then I waited some more. And then I thought, at that time, I was getting close to 70, and I thought, I don't know. I just don't have time to wait around to be discovered here. I'm going to have to do something on my own.
You go, girl. I love that.
So I decided, okay, it's up to me. I got to do this myself.
Yeah. Yeah, no one else is going to do it for you. Well, I'm impressed because I wrote my first book when I was 50, and I thought that was quite an amazing accomplishment. Now, my next question is, did you, all the way through school, and you taught public schools for more than 20 years, did you always enjoy doing research?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
and I'm fascinated with history, always have been. It does. I don't care what kind of history it is. It can be, American history, can be world history. I taught world history, but, I love all kinds of history. When I was like a teenager, when I was like 15, I used to sit around reading books about the Civil War.
Yeah.
So it's kind of just the way I am.
Well, I think we're very much alike because I used to surprisingly do the same thing. And I remember someone saying that if you ever wanted to be a writer, the topic that would stand the test of time would be the Civil War. and I filed that one away. And then as history and time moved on, it actually became the Kennedy assassination. And I wrote two books about that.
How interesting.
I adore doing research. I was a history major in college. What did you major in?
I majored in social studies as a secondary education, so I took history and political science and psychology, sociology, the broad spectrum. But history was my first love.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know, me too. That's for sure. Now, we're going to take a break and hear from our wonderful sponsors, and they're all they all love history, too. I checked that out before I let them come on the show to sponsor us.
All right.
Yeah, that's a prerequisite. When we come back, we're going to talk about the book titled Redford Farm, A Novel of the Underground Railroad. And interestingly enough, it's Redfield, but your actual maiden name is Redline, right?
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Very, very close there. We're going to explore this.
Okay.
We'll be right back with Judith Scoopy.
Lately, there's a whining epidemic in our world. People are even whining about whining. Are you sick and tired of listening to everyone whining all the time? So was January Jones, the author of Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. Ms. Jones based her book on a survey of the top 10 things that people whine about at all ages and all stages of life. January is a success coach that can tell you how to help others. When you buy Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th commandment, you'll find out what people whine about and how to stop them from whining. This is the perfect gift book to give or get for any occasion. Thou Shall Not Whine was voted the best gift to be given anonymously for those special people in your life. Ms. Jones is an internationally known author in the style of Irma Bombeck, specializing in housewife humor with her book being published in Korea and China. You can find Thou Shall Not Whine at Amazon.com. With over 30 years as a registered nurse with empathic ability, Carolyn Green, a.k.a. The Energy Nurse, is bridging the gap between traditional and alternative medicine, certified in the areas of energy medicine, life coaching, and as a medical intuitive. She brings to each client an integrative approach to body, mind, and spirit. Her book, found on Balboa Press and Amazon, Getting to Know You, Guided Pearls of Wisdom for a More Soulful Existence, is a channel journey for clearing the mind clutter to bring about healthier thought patterns. As a motivational speaker, Carolyn brings new light to old issues and is engaging, interactive, and enlightening. With her newly launched The Energy Nurse jewelry line, she brings to you stones and crystals that are not only beautiful to wear, but balancing and healing as well. To contact or learn more about Carolyn, go to www.theenergynurse.com.
Become the next great business success story by getting free PR for your business. That's why January Jones is offering a free copy of the new audio how-to course called How to Build Your Business, Get More Email Subscribers, and Make More Money Free Doing Podcast and Internet Talk Radio Interviews. Your copy is free for the asking at realfasttalkradio.com. Again, that website is realfasttalkradio.com. Go now.
Welcome back to Real Fast January Jones, sharing success stories. And today I'm sharing Judith Redline Coopy's success story. Both Judith and I are in our 70s and proud of it. We've accomplished a lot. We've lived long lives. Isn't it amazing to begin a writing career at this time in our life, Judith?
It is, and it's wonderful because it's just like breathing new life into yourself. You have opportunities and experiences that you never thought you'd have. It's great.
Mm-hmm. I love what you, in your notes, we have, why do you write historical fiction, not mystery, contemporary, fantasy, et cetera, et cetera? And you answer, what makes you think I have a choice? Writers write what they have to write. There's no getting away from it. You can't just decide to write in some genre because it's popular. It'll give you up every time. You write what you have to write. And isn't that just, that is one of the best statements I've ever shared about the writing that takes place in a person. When it comes out, there's such an adrenaline rush, isn't there?
There really is. And it's just a, it's just a very honest thing. You have the, you write because you're interested in something, because it moves you, because you care about it, and you know you can't make that up.
No, no. I adore historical fiction. I was going to say hysterical. It could go either way. So you've known you were a writer all your life. And now you've had some modest success, articles published in national magazines. But then you wanted to write fiction. And now, see, I'm in total awe of you on that one, dear, because I've always written nonfiction. I think I'm terrified of going to fiction because sometimes I'm afraid of where it'll take me. Have you had some surprises on your journey?
Oh, yes. It's once you create a character, I know that you've heard this before. People say the characters come to life and they take over. Well, they don't really take over, but they really influence what's going to happen. You know, if you've created good characters, then they're like real people, and real people react in real ways. So, yeah, it's been, it's really a lot of fun. It's my favorite part of writing is creating good characters. Like, I like strong women. And I, all my female characters are, well, I can't say all of them, but my lead characters are strong women, and they're women who face whatever life puts before them and handle it well. And, you know, so good characters are very important to me.
And, you know, it's interesting, both of us, we've had 70 years worth of experience watching wonderful women, what they've done, how they survived. It's wonderful to be able to share that. But before we go on, briefly for our listeners who are sitting there thinking, gosh, I wonder if I could write a book, let's give them your five good reasons to self-publish.
Okay. First of all, it's easy. Nowadays, it's really easy. All you have to do is upload your book on Amazon, and you're a published author. And that's an opportunity that hasn't been available for very long. And, you know, it's a wonderful opportunity, and here's why. All I wanted was for my readers to read my books. I didn't want critics. I didn't care about reviews. I didn't care about anything except... if a reader reads my book and likes my book and tells his friends he likes my book and they read my book, that's all that it takes. You know, it's nothing nothing between me and my readers. You know, it's just almost like a conversation between me and them. I'm telling them a story, and they, in turn, pass the story on or tell other people that it was a good story. And that's that's wonderful. But it's very easy. The second thing is, it's basically free. If you just publish, if you just want to publish ebooks, you can publish them, and you know, Amazon doesn't charge you to upload, and so you put it out there. And if you sell any, then you share the profits with Amazon, which is really a very fair arrangement. You know, they are generous in the percentages that they allow authors to have. The other thing is, I'm so glad I lived long enough to be aware of the internet and all the possibilities that are there, because the world is your market.
Uh-huh.
You know, if I'd have done this 50 years ago, 20 years ago, I wouldn't have had the kind of opportunities I have now, because, you know, everybody around the world can use the internet. Well, not everybody, but
most.
The people who are fortunate enough. But you know, the world is your market, and you have access to readers from all over. And you know, I've heard from people in Australia and in England. Redfield Farm, my first book, has been translated into German and Norwegian. And you know, it's just like, wow, you know. And so I'm kind of in awe of all the opportunities and all the things that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next reason that I think that might be a good idea to self-publish is if you have some success and you're a pretty good writer, you might, you know, an agent or a publisher might just tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, we'd like to publish your work. You know, that's a real possibility, because it's out there and you get noticed. And then the last one, you can make a little money. As a matter of fact, you might make a lot of money, but unless you make it really big, you probably won't make a lot. But, you know, it can be profitable. And, you know, when I first did this, I published in a print edition, and I put my book up on eBay.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry,
uh-huh.
Amazon. Sorry uh-huh. about that. I only hoped to make back the money I had invested. And I had invested some, because I'll talk a little later about some of the things you should and shouldn't do if you're self-publishing. But I had invested some money, and all I hoped was to make that much back. Wow. I was very pleasantly surprised that I did much better than that.
Mm-hmm. It's I published my first book 20 years ago, so it was a much, much different world than it was challenging. Now you can go to Amazon, create space, things happen there. It's very technologically easy to do. And you're right, the world is your market, because for me, my books brought me to the world of talk radio. And now I have guests from all over the world. And as you said, you might get noticed by an agent or publisher. And I self-published my first book, but then eventually I got noticed and I had a New York publisher. So it can become very, very exciting. And you certainly can make some money, not a lot, but enough to make it worth your while. Don't you agree?
I do agree, yes.
Now, if you had to do it all over again, we're here to talk about what to do and what not to do. What would you do differently?
I'm not sure I would do much of anything differently. I would probably follow the path that I did. People have asked me if I was sorry that I didn't do this earlier in life.
Yeah.
And
uh-huh.
I can say no, because all the parts of my life have been great, and I wouldn't want to have missed any of them. So earlier success might have changed my life in ways that I wouldn't even imagine, and I might have missed something, and I don't want to have missed anything. I love teaching. I wouldn't trade a moment that I spent in the classroom with for anything. Love kids. And had a wonderful time doing it. But, you know, as a teacher, you get a little bit older and you start to think, well, you know, you got to know when it's time to go, because if the kids start looking at you like this old lady that teaches history, you know, you don't want to hang around too long. So I retired with the full intention of becoming a writer, and writing fits right now. And so I don't think I'd change it. I like the order that things came in, and the fact that I've been given a generous amount of time to do all the things that I enjoy doing. And so I don't know. I guess some people might have different feelings about it, but my attitude is it's been great. I wouldn't change it.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. And, you know, I totally agree with you, because just like you, I do love research. And I love this comment you made. I tell my husband that I could spend the rest of my life in the library, and he could just shove pizza under the door. I think we have to get our husbands together, because I think my husband feels that way about the radio show. He could just shove pizza under the studio door. But speaking of this wonderful radio show, we have some fabulous sponsors. We're going to hear from them right now, and we'll be right back with Judith.
January's co-host, Connie Cockrell, the author of Mystery at the Fair, has been writing since 2011 after a challenge from her daughter. An eclectic writer, she's written mysteries, sci-fi, fantasy, and even a thriller. She has been included in four different anthologies and published on the e-zine Everyday Fiction. Connie continues to write and entertain with whatever comes into her head. You can find her books on most ebook retail sites. Paperback editions are also available. Be sure to visit her at www.conniesrandomthoughts.com, on Facebook, and on Twitter at Connie Cockrell. The new book, God Reconsidered, Searching for the Truth in the Battle Between Atheism and Religion by Scott Smith, explains why both militant atheists and believers in traditional religions ignore inconvenient truths. Scott argues in favor of the insights of Gnostic Christianity. Check out www.godreconsidered.com to read a sample chapter. That's godreconsidered.com.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems? People who have fearlessly shared their stories, their struggles, and their successes? People who have priceless personalities? In my new book, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, I am honored to be able to share with you people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, starting over, self-esteem, and workplace issues. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and even astonish you. You will adore getting to meet them at Amazon.com. My book is now available, 2-for-1, paperback and Kindle editions. I'm pleased to announce that Priceless Personalities is also now available at audiobooks.com. We have a priceless personality visiting with us today, Judith Redline Coopy. Judith and I are both in our 70s, and we're finally getting it right. Now, Judith, let's share your website information and share with my listeners how they can get your books.
My website is www.judithredlinecoopy.com. And my books are available on Amazon. They're available at any bookstore. If you if they don't keep them in stock, just ask them to order. They can be ordered very quickly and brought to you in a day or two. My website is the main access, and my email address is on my website. If you have any comments or questions and are interested in more of my story, feel free to email me and I'll be happy to respond.
Okay, now let's talk about Redfield Farm, a novel of the Underground Railroad. I was always fascinated with the Civil War growing up, and so you wrote a book about the Underground Railroad. How much research did this take for you?
It took a great deal of research. There's a great story about how I got started in this. I do genealogy, and I was researching a branch of my family, and I found out that something I hadn't known in the, previously was that they were Quakers, and they lived in Bedford County, Pennsylvania, which is one of the southern counties that borders Maryland, and so I went around, I did the research, I found which branch of this family was mine, and I then found out that their home was still standing there in Bedford County. So I went to see it, and the man who owned it at the time didn't live in it. He was just farming the land. But he was very gracious. He showed me around, and he said, "Oh, and you know that it was a station on the Underground Railroad." And I said,
Oh,
really? And I had no idea that that was the case. Now, I can't prove that because people didn't write down, keep records of what they were doing in the Underground Railroad. The things that we know about it were written afterwards. Right. So I do know that it has been documented that some of their neighbors and members of their monthly meeting, which was the Dunnings Creek meeting in Bedford County, that some of those are documented as having been part of the Underground Railroad. So I choose to believe that my ancestors were involved too. But at any rate, that's what started me. And then I did research on the Underground Railroad. I just read, probably 20 books about the Underground Railroad, various memoirs and accounts by people who were involved, and then scholarly accounts written later and so forth. And one of the things that I find happening is when I do research and I get really deeply involved, the story emerges out of the research. It's kind of like you get so immersed in it that you feel almost as though you're there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where you draw the line between your research and your writing. Sometimes I have to tear myself away because I love research so much. And I think, okay, Judy, you have to stop now. You have to write. But I'd say I did a good year and a half of research before I wrote anything. But, having done that, when I started to write, the writing flowed. It just came. And I think that's because you get so involved in it, so well-informed, that you can write about it without much effort.
Well, I'll take it even to another level. So I'll take it to the place where you do so much research, the people you're researching begin to inhabit your being. They become a part of your life. And I don't know if you believe in channeling or whatever, but they start telling their own story. They're ready to tell it. They've been on the other side. Yeah.
I think you're right about that. It happens so, it just flows so well, but it's so effortless that it just feels as though your hand is being guided as you write.
Yeah.
No, this first book I wrote actually by hand. I wrote it on legal pads with a pen.
Wow.
And I love that kind of writing. I really do love it. I would like to do all my writing that way. But then once I had it written, of course, I had to put it on the computer, which was long and drudgery. And I thought, oh, no. So I don't do it by hand anymore. But that experience of actually writing it by hand and having the feeling sometimes that my hand was actually guided, it was just a really great experience.
Yeah. I experienced the same thing, too, because many times I would be writing. I'm not a night person at all. I'm usually in bed now by 9 o'clock, 9:30 at the latest. But when I was in my writing phase, I would start like at 10 or 11. I would start writing, and I would go through till 2 or 3 in the morning. I would save everything on the computer, go to bed, wake up the next morning and open it up and wonder who wrote this.
No kidding.
Yeah. It would be like, I would just sit there and said, oh my gosh, where did this come from? And I think that's what happens with some of these books. They're actually quite, quite spiritual. And I think people get a help from the other side.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very possible. As a matter of fact, I even thought my handwriting looked like my sister's handwriting, and my sister was gone. So it was like, I honestly looked at it sometimes, and I thought, this looks like Barb wrote it.
Okay, well, there you go. We're on the same page, dear. Okay, so now let's talk about how Redfield Farm became a success. You said it was like dropping a pebble in a pond and watching the ripple spread out.
Right.
Tell us about that experience.
I went to Bedford County. It's set in Bedford County. I went to the Bedford County Historical Society, and I told them that I had this book about the Underground Railroad, and it was well-researched, and asked them if I could launch my book from there. And they were gracious. They've been my most wonderful fans, because they continue to support me all the time. But I went there, and I gave book talks around the community about the Underground Railroad. I used the local appeal to start it off. People love to read about places that they're familiar with.
Right.
And it just spread out from there. And then, it's been a community read selection for two cities, Amesbury, Massachusetts, and Amsterdam, New York, both chose it as a one city, one book selection. And, you know, it's, I honestly, I didn't know anything about promotion. I didn't do anything to promote it. I just put it out there. And the wonderful thing about it was that word of mouth just spread the book, spread the word, and it became a very, very high, a very good seller with Amazon, and you know, all around Central Pennsylvania, it's pretty much, you know, quite a number of people around here who read my books and enjoy them.
I bet they do. And you state that once you put it out as an ebook, it just took off. And that is the most amazing thing about a publishing literary career, that anyone who is sitting here listening to us, you can create, as Judith said, your own ebook, no expense. It's print on demand. It's basically a no-brainer. Don't you agree, Judith?
I do agree. I think it's a wonderful opportunity, and I know there are many, many people who have longed to write a book and think they could and would like to try it, but they're really afraid to put themselves out there. And I say go for it. It's been a wonderful experience, and even if it hadn't been as successful as it has, I would still have profited by it and felt as though it was a great thing to do.
Okay. We're hearing from two literary ladies who are both in their 70s. If you're thinking about writing a book, don't think about writing it for the public. Think about writing it for your family. Think about the people you love, sharing some of your insights, some of your thoughts. I think it's something that you'll never regret doing. Don't you agree?
Oh, yes, certainly. I can't imagine any regrets, because it's just a wonderful experience. The writing itself is fun, and then putting it out, and even if it is just for your family.
Mm-hmm.
We should take the word just out of that, even if it is
okay.
for your family.
It is.
It's a wonderful keepsake, something that they can point to and enjoy, and you know, it can become part of their heritage.
I agree, and it's a wonderful gift. It's something they will treasure. It's something you can share, and I feel that writing is just like planting a tree. Once you write that book, it's out there for a long, long time.
Well, we can hope so. I certainly
we can hope so. Right now, we're going to hear from my wonderful sponsors who have been with me for a long, long time. We'll be right back with Judith.
From cowgirl to caregiver to consultant, meet Becky Fiola, author of The Elder Care Consultant, your guide to making the best choices possible. Growing up on remote ranches across the western states, she tended to orphan creatures large and small. Later on, that nurturing instinct served her well as the primary caregiver for her late husband. And now, she offers hope and guidance as a consultant to the elderly and their families. When you need advice on caring for an aging loved one, you can find those answers and her book at Amazon.com and her website, www.assistedlivingadvantage.com. Joining January Jones as her co-host on the show is Miles Miller, the great success creator. Miles is a two-time best-selling author with books entitled Against the Grain and Successonomics. He continues to transform 100,000 people all over the world through his speaking and training. His uplifting and essential messages like Bulletproof, Time Machine, and Strength in Numbers are impacting every audience he meets. Together with January Jones, they'll explore how to be successful and what steps you can take to achieve the success you want. Visit successhq.net, leadup.biz, and learningbreaks.com.
January Jones wants you to grow your business fast, getting free PR, doing interviews with podcasters and internet radio shows. Grab your free copy of our audio how-to course called How to Build Your Business, Get More Email Subscribers, and Make More Money Free Doing Podcast and Internet Talk Radio Interviews. Grab your copy right now at realfasttalkradio.com. Again, that website is realfasttalkradio.com.
Welcome back to Real Fast January Jones, sharing success stories. We're visiting with Judith Redline Coopy. Now, Judith, who do you like to read? Who's your favorite author?
Well, I don't have one favorite author. I have many. I've been a reader all my life, and I have gone through, like, I used to choose an author or start reading an author and saying, wow, I really like this. Like, for example, John Steinbeck. I've read everything he ever wrote, and I was so sorry to come to the last one because I always knew that I would love whatever I was reading of his. There's a woman in North Carolina whose name is Lee Smith, who writes about wonderful character-driven stories about Appalachia, and I like that. I like her work. I like Molly Gloss, who writes about strong women in the West. Mm-hmm. I've always loved Willa Cather. Now, she's an old writer is from some time ago, but her stories are so good. They're about the pioneering in Nebraska, for example, I'm sure many of your listeners have heard of My Antonia and Old Pioneers. I've always loved her work. And so I guess my taste is eclectic. I often choose to read prize-winning novels like Pulitzer Prize winners or Critics Circle Award just because I don't have as much time to read as I'd like to, and so I almost want to be guaranteed it's going to be a good read.
Yeah.
And so of course, everybody does. Everybody wants wants the selections that they read to be good. But I can't say I have a single favorite. I'm open to almost any kind of books. Now, I don't read fantasy, and I don't write fantasy, but that doesn't mean that's not a judgment against it. It's just a matter of personal taste. But I read a lot of the kind of thing I write, basically historical fiction, good stories about good people.
Well, you know what I love is your advice to aspiring writers of any age. I say any age for all of you listening. Judith says, write all the time, some every day. Don't try for perfection in your first draft. Get the story down first and then fix it. And do not sweat rejection. Now, the other advice you give, that I am giving this advice out all the time, and it is, get your book written. You have to go and pay your dues, write the book. And then your advice is hire a professional editor. Talk about that, Judith.
Well, I think, you know, when you say self-published, sometimes there's a stigma attached. People think, oh, well, you weren't good enough to get published by a real publisher, so you publish it yourself. And that's really changing very, very rapidly. We have a lot of fine work coming out now that has just been made possible by the technology. So I just think that you have to try to be as professional as you can. Therefore, the product you've put out should look like and feel like and read like a professionally published book. So I hire an editor, and this is a line editor, basically someone who is watching for the P's and Q's and dotting the I's and making sure the commas are in the right place. But I think that's majorly important, and I think it's a real telltale sign that you are not really a pro unless, if your book is riddled with grammatical or spelling errors, it doesn't look good to the public. And I feel the same way about the cover. I hire a professional cover designer, and that's because that first impression that the reader gets or the bookstore shopper gets is that cover. And, you know, I think we've all seen covers that were not particularly professional looking. Maybe somebody's friend, relative was pretty good at art, and maybe they drew something and so forth. But I think you have to have a professional looking cover because that's the doorway to your book. And if somebody picks it up because the cover looks good, and they turn it over and they read the synopsis on the back, and then they say, oh, okay, and I even open it and read the first page, that's what brought them there.
Oh,
so I think we have to be willing to spend a little money to put out a professional-looking product, because I think it's what really is going to make your book a success.
And finally, and this is really a big thing, you must be willing to go out and promote your work. You know, having had a New York publisher, it's like people think, oh, I'll get a publisher and they'll promote my book. Guess what? You're the flavor of the month, and next month they have another book to promote. So the only one who is going to do it is you. You need to take some marketing seminars, and if you don't do it, who will? Don't you agree?
Right. I agree 100%. Right now, I'm on a book tour. I've mm-hmm. been in Pennsylvania since November 4th, and I will be returning to Arizona on Saturday the 21st. And every day, I have had an appearance, an event, a book signing, a book talk. Sometimes I make PowerPoint presentations, and I go around to historical societies and libraries and places like that. And it's a lot of work. It really is.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not just the work that I'm doing this week or this month where I'm doing the actual appearances. I have to make the schedule. I have to call people and ask them mm-hmm. if I can come. And sometimes they say no, and that's okay because it doesn't always work out. But it's all on me. And if I am not, you know, energetic enough to do this, then nobody else is going to do it for me. So I do the best I can, and I, you know, travel a lot and talk to a lot of people, and it's very. As I say, it takes a lot of energy, but it's worth it.
Oh,
and you meet
certainly.
Such wonderful people. You know, the
you
best
do.
People in the world. You meet in libraries. You meet in bookstores.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're just great.
Well, I agree with you. I've been on book tour. I've been out there, been there, done that. You know, selfishly, I have to say I've become lazy. So now I do a radio show and I do my book tour. from Payson, Arizona. But I agree totally what you said about you meet some of the most amazing people, the best people. It's quite an experience. And if you're fortunate enough to have written a good book like Judith Redline Coopy, you will enjoy your book tour. And we certainly have enjoyed having you with us today, Judith. Let me know when you get back to Arizona, and I hope we can get together.
Okay, that'll be wonderful, and thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, it's been lovely. To my wonderful listeners, we hope you've enjoyed our show today as much as I've enjoyed doing it. My upcoming guests will all amaze, amuse, and astonish you, just like Judith. I would love to welcome you to our wonderful No Whining world. When you can, sign on to my website, JanuaryJones.com. We love sharing our stories, our struggles, and our secrets for a successful book tour. Remember my mantra, if you think it, then you can do it. So for now, my dear friends, you must stop with the whining, and then you must start smiling, and then you must start sharing our show with everyone you know. And if that doesn't work, then you can start eating chocolate. Lots and lots of chocolate. Again, thank you to my guest today, Judith Redline Coopy. This is January Jones, thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe as we close with music by Sorantos.
This is Sorantos, and you're listening to January Jones. This is Sarantos. I hope you enjoyed January Jones' latest episode.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity, plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones. Thank you.